שלום וברוכים הבאים לעושים היסטוריה, פרק מספר 166.5, השישה באוגוסט 2015. מלחמת הזרמים, פיילוט מספר 2 של Curious Minds.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Dark. Are you telling me you built a time machine?
עושים היסטוריה, עם רן לוי.
שלום. הפרק הבא של עושים היסטוריה עדיין נמצא בשלבי עריכה אחרונים ויהיה מוכן בעוד מספר ימים ספורים. אז בינתיים, כדי שלא תחכו יותר מדי זמן, החלטתי להעלות את הפיילוט השני של Curious Minds, הגרסה האמריקנית של עושים היסטוריה. הפעם מדובר בגרסה מחודשת ומעודכנת של מלחמת הזרמים, פרק ותיק של עושים היסטוריה ששכתבתי אותו כמעט מחדש לכבוד הגרסה האנגלית. כשהעלינו את הפיילוט הראשון לפני כחודש פחות או יותר, נתתם לי המון המון הערות וביקורות, והשתדלתי לקחת אותן בשיא הרצינות. כפי שתוכלו לשמוע מיד, הפיילוט החדש של Curious Minds שונה בתכלית מהפיילוט הראשון, כמעט בכל פרמטר. ראשית, הקריינית שלנו אחרת. שושי שמולביץ, מפיקה ועיתונאית מוכשרת בערוץ TLV1, רדיו אינטרנטי, שכתבות שלה הופיעו גם ב-NPR האמריקנית וסיפור ישראלי שלנו. אגב, על חשש קלי אולוקלין עדיין איתנו, וגם אותה תשמעו כנראה בפרקים הבאים של Curious Minds. כחלק מתהליך ההקמה של הפודקאסט החדש, אני בודק קולות חדשים וסגנונות הגשה שונים, ושושי היא חלק מהניסוי הזה. גם הפורמט של הפרק שונה לגמרי. את הקול שלי תשמעו בפרק, אבל הרבה פחות מבפיילוט הראשון. כמו בפעם שעברה, אני אשמח מאוד לשמוע את התגובות שלכם לפיילוט החדש. מה הצלחנו לשפר? מה עדיין זקוק לליטוש? ואיך אפשר להתאים את התוכנית טוב יותר לקהל האמריקני? הפידבקים שלכם הם הכלי הטוב ביותר שיש לי בארגז הכלים שלי כדי להשתפר ולהצליח. תוכלו ליצור עם מקשר בפייסבוק, בטוויטר, בתגובות שבאתר, וגם במייל, run@ranlevi.com, אם כי קחו בחשבון שהמייל שלי כל כך מוצף, עד שיקח לי קצת זמן כנראה לחזור אליכם. ברשתות החברתיות ובאתר אני בדרך כלל זמין יותר. ועוד מילה אחרונה לפני שנתחיל, על הפודקאסט החדש שחשפתי בפניכם בשבוע שעבר, סיפור משפחתי. סיפור משפחתי עוסק בסיפורים האנושיים של הגיבורים מהמשפחות שלנו. סבא או סבתא שעברו הרפתקאות מדהימות במלחמת העולם השנייה או בתקופת קום המדינה, הורי או דוד שיש לו סיפור מרתק, דברים שכאלה. אנחנו לוקחים את הסיפורים המרתקים האלה והופכים אותם לתוכניות רדיו תיעודיות בסגנון עושים היסטוריה ופה ושם בארץ ישראל. תוכניות, לא, יצירות רדיופוניות שיציגו את הסיפורים האלה באור חדש ושונה לחלוטין. אתם מוזמנים לגלוש אל www.familysounds.co.il כדי להאזין לפרק הראשון שכבר העליתי לאתר. סיפור משפחתי היא דרך חדשה ולדעתי בעלת המון פוטנציאל לצקת בסיס כלכלי לתחום הזה של הפודקאסטינג בישראל מבלי להסתמך על פרסום וחסויות, וזו הסיבה שאני, יפתח מזור מהפודקאסט פה ושם בארץ ישראל וענת קורול מגלי צהל, חברנו יחד למיזם הזה. אני מאמין שמשפחות שחוגגות אירועים מיוחדים, למשל יום הולדת לסבא או חתונת כסף וכדומה, יהיו מוכנות להשקיע את הכסף בהפקה של סיפור משפחתי, מכיוון שבסופו של דבר מדובר במתנה שכמעט אין לה תחליף. אנשים מוכנים לשלם כל כך הרבה כסף לדי-ג'יי בחתונה, אבל סיפור כמו סיפור משפחתי הוא לא משהו זמני וחולף, אלא מתנה שנשמרת לדורות. הלוואי ולי הייתה דרך לשמוע את הסיפור של אבא של סבא שלי, לשמוע את הקול שלו ולגלות איזה מין אדם הוא היה. זו חוויה שאין הרבה דומות לה, לדעתי. הפרק הראשון של סיפור משפחתי עסק בסיפורו של שרגא שוורץ, ניצול שואה וחייל במלחמות ישראל, ואני יכול לספר לכם מהפידבקים שקיבלתי שלפחות בן משפחה אחד בכה מרוב התרגשות אחרי ששמע את הפרק. אז אם גם לכם יש סיפור משפחתי מעניין שכזה, וחשוב לכם לשמר אותו, ולא סתם לשמר אותו, אלא לשמר אותו כך שגם הנינים שלכם ירצו להאזין וליהנות ממנו, בקרו www.familysounds.co.il או צרו עם מקשר ב-run@ranlevi.com. ואגב, אני עדיין מחפש מועמדים לתוכנית פיילוט של סיפור משפחתי באנגלית. אז אם יש לכם חברים או קרובים בארצות הברית שאולי ירצו להפיק תוכנית שכזו, ספרו להם על סיפור משפחתי. זהו. וכעת אל הפיילוט השני של Curious Minds. האזנה נעימה.
Take a look around you. Do you see all those electrical appliances? The TV, the computer, the oven? Your home probably has dozens of devices which run on electricity. Now multiply that by the number of people in your city, by the number of people in your country, by the number of people in the whole world. Everyone needs electricity. Electricity is big business. Hi, and welcome to Curious Minds. I'm Shoshi Shmulevitz. This week's episode, The War of Currents. The War of Currents was a very interesting sort of war. No bullets were fired in this war, and no one lost their lives. Well, almost no one. Some dogs and cats died, as did one convicted criminal. It was a war that still affects us to this day, and duking it out in the War of Currents were three of the greatest minds in the history of mankind, famed inventors Thomas Edison, George Westinghouse, and Nikola Tesla. What started this battle was the question, what is the best method to conduct electricity? Or, to be more specific, how could electricity produced by a power plant be delivered into American homes? Should it be done via DC, direct current, or by an alternating current, AC? You might be thinking, this sounds like some very technical engineering stuff. But the debate was actually far from being purely technical jargon. It was all about money, and lots of it. It was the late 19th century, and the world was on the verge of the age of electricity. Everyone wanted electricity in their home. And just think, the person controlling the distribution of electricity would make a fortune. Everyone knew that eventually, power plants would sprout up everywhere, in the private and public sectors, and as part of the government and military. So the infrastructure needed for the production of electricity spelled big bucks. We're talking cables, engines, transformers, maintenance, you name it. And there was another key point. Whoever produced this electricity would get to set the electrical standard to which all other electrical products must conform. That's a lot of power and a lot of influence. Our story begins with Thomas Alva Edison. Edison was born in Milan, Ohio in 1847. He began his career as a paperboy, delivering newspapers and trains. He was curious, self-educated, and he kept a secret chemical laboratory in one of the baggage cars where he conducted experiments. Until he spilled some chemicals and burned down the baggage car. That got him kicked out of the trains, so he could only deliver the newspapers at the stations. But one day, he got lucky. While walking on one of the platforms, he saw a toddler playing on the tracks, and he noticed a freight train was backing up on the same tracks. Edison could tell that the boy was about to be run over by the train. He jumped on the tracks, grabbed the kid, and saved his life at the very last moment. Lucky for Edison, it turned out that the boy was the station manager's kid. As a token of gratitude, the station manager taught Edison how to operate the telegraph, which sounds like kind of a weird reward, but it was exactly what Edison needed. So at age 15, Edison became a telegraph operator. He preferred the night shift since it gave him time to dabble with his experiments. He was trying to invent an automatic telegraph transponder. Until he spilled another chemical on the boss's desk, which, again, started a fire, which got him fired again. But all those experiments did pay off. Edison was noticed by the world when he invented the phonograph, which was like a proto-record player. And that was one of many inventions. He also created the first microphone and a method of synchronizing pictures and sound. That's the technology that led to the motion picture. Overall, Edison patented more than 1,300 inventions. And imagine, he achieved all that success after only about 3 months of formal education in his entire life. But one thing Edison didn't invent, the light bulb. Someone else got there first. He did, however, invent the first light bulb that was suitable for mass production, which is an important milestone in itself. Edison wasn't just creative. He was also a savvy businessman. As soon as he developed his light bulb, he realized that the next thing he needed to create was a network to distribute the electricity. I mean, what good is the light bulb without the cable transmitting the power from the plant into the home? Edison was quick to form several electric companies, which later merged into one, General Electric. Edison's preferred method for delivering electricity was the direct current method, or DC. And since he was a big shot in the electrical market in those days, DC became the de facto standard for electricity in the U.S. Meanwhile, in Europe, some inventors were concocting a different method of electricity distribution, alternating current, or AC. This new method attracted the interest of another influential American inventor and businessman, George Westinghouse. Westinghouse's first major innovation was the railroad air brake. When he was 22, he witnessed a near-fatal train accident where two trains collided. The train's engineers saw the collision coming, but they couldn't stop the trains because the existing braking system was manual and slow. Westinghouse invented a new braking system that used the force of compressed air to stop the train cars. It made railroad travel much, much safer.
Now that you've seen part one of Wintertime, let's turn to our Westinghouse program and Betty Furness.
As a businessman, Westinghouse's company became an industrial superpower. He dabbled in everything from producing electricity to manufacturing stoves, refrigerators, sewing machines, washing machines, radios, even generators for ships.
Here and that too. You won't need any of those things ever again when you have this completely automatic Westinghouse electric sink.
Westinghouse believed in alternating current and saw it as a superior method of distribution.
You can be sure if it's Westinghouse.
So, what are direct current and alternating current? And why were they so important to the future of electricity distribution? To answer these questions, we'll turn to our house engineer and Israeli podcaster, my co-host, Ron Levy.
Hi, Shoshi.
Hi, Ron.
So, what is direct current? An electric current in a metal cable is basically the flow of electrons. There are always freely moving electrons in metal conductors, but since each electron is free to move in a random direction, the net result is that no current is flowing. The water molecules are moving back and forth, but there's no flow. Now, apply an electric potential to the metal by attaching a battery to the metal wire, for example, and this will make the electrons move in one direction in an orderly fashion. The battery's potential creates an electric field, which pulls the electrons towards the positive end of the battery, like water flowing downhill in a stream. This one-way flow of electrons is called direct current, or DC. Electrical appliances, such as light bulbs, for example, need DC electricity to operate, so Edison's power plants generated DC electricity and distributed it to the consumer's home. Sounds great, right? Well, distributing DC electricity via cables and wires has some problems. The major drawback is energy efficiency. When electricity flows in the metal, it encounters some measure of resistance. Think of it as a sort of friction preventing the electrons from flowing freely in the cable. This friction creates heat, which is just wasted energy. Instead of flowing to the consumer's home, electricity is wasted on heating the cables themselves. And it's not an insignificant waste. The energy wasted increases by a power of 2 relative to the current flowing in the cable. In other words, if we double the current, the energy loss will be 4 times higher. This wasted energy means wasted money. One way to deal with this inefficiency is to lower the cable's resistance, and you can do that by using thicker cables. The thicker the cable, the less friction and less energy wasted on heating. The problem is that copper, the metal used in electric cables, is expensive and heavy. Many electric poles just couldn't handle the weight of the cables, especially when they were covered in heavy snows, and they came crashing down electrocuting people who were walking by. These problems meant that power plants needed to be close to every consumer's home. I'm talking about 2 miles, which is a ridiculously short distance. Edison would have needed power plants within 2 miles of every person's home. But more power plants equals more money. More plants would have to be built, which Edison's company would build and operate. He also made a lot of money on patents royalties, since he held many patents related to DC distribution. There was another major drawback to the DC method. It was very difficult to convert the electricity from one voltage to another. Imagine you have a light bulb, and that light bulb requires 100 volts to operate. Now imagine you have some other appliance, say a washing machine, and this washing machine needs a higher voltage, maybe 220 volts. Since converting from one voltage level to another is a complicated and inefficient process, you have to create a second separate distribution system dedicated to 220 volts. That means more power plants, more cables, you get the idea. This makes the whole process of generating and getting electricity out to consumers' home very, very expensive. Now, what about AC? Remember, in DC, electrons in the cable all travel in one direction. In AC, these electrons still move together in the same direction, except they constantly change that direction, moving back and forth inside the wire. This rather simple modification, it turns out, solves many of the issues and problems associated with DC electricity. It's much easier to convert from one voltage level to another in AC than it is in DC. So if the power plant produces electricity in 100 volts AC, for example, this electricity can be converted to a much higher voltage, say 10,000 volts, sent through the cables, and then reconverted to 100 or 220 volts closer to the consumer's home. Remember that when a current passes through cable, some energy is wasted as heat. The more current travels in the cable, the more heat. It turns out that the higher the voltage in the cable, the smaller the current. So if the voltage in the cable is ramped up to 10,000 volts, the current gets really small, and that means much less heating. With AC, the copper wires can be thinner, lighter, and cheaper, and electricity can travel to much greater distances, hundreds of miles, instead of only 1 or 2 miles, as in DC.
Westinghouse knew all of this, and he believed that AC had the potential to revolutionize electricity in the US. But he had 2 big problems. One was that AC is more complicated to engineer than DC. Working with AC requires a much deeper understanding of math and physics. Also, to be an effective distribution system, AC has to have all the elements in the electricity supply chain. Generators to produce the electricity, transformers to convert from one voltage to another, and a motor that could operate on AC electricity. Westinghouse didn't have all of these elements. He was missing the transformers and the AC motors. So how would he overcome this hurdle? Enter Nikola Tesla. Tesla was born in 1856 in a small village in what's now Croatia. He'd always had a photographic memory, and beginning in childhood, he would have these semi-epileptic visions where a word or an object would trigger a seizure, and then he'd have an epiphany. He would see detailed inventions in his mind's eye. He could do complicated calculations in his head, and he got the highest grades in his first year in college. But he also had a complicated and troubled personality. He was addicted to gambling, so much so that he didn't study for his university exams and he failed to graduate. Later in life, he would have a breakdown, maybe related to the seizures he'd had as a child. But even without a formal college degree, there was no denying that Tesla was a genius. He pioneered Hungary's telephone network. He invented the world's first speaker and the spark plug used in cars. And he was the first to invent the radio transmitter, which Marconi usually gets the credit for. Tesla had a natural and intuitive understanding of electricity, a way of visualizing how currents and magnetic fields behave that other engineers could only envy. While he was still in Europe, Tesla worked for Edison Machine Works' European division. When he decided to move to the U.S. in 1884, his boss gave him a letter of recommendation to show to Edison himself. The letter said, "I know of two great men. You're the first," that's Edison, of course. "The second one is standing before you." So Edison first employed Tesla as just another engineer. But it didn't take long for Tesla's brilliance to get noticed, and he moved up in the company. Eventually, Edison himself was tasking Tesla to find solutions to the company's trickiest problems. At one point, Edison offered Tesla $50,000, the equivalent of $1 million today, to improve some performance issues in the electrical equipment. Tesla worked day and night, and he solved it. But Edison went back on his promise and refused to pay. He dismissed Tesla as not understanding the American sense of humor and offered him a pathetic salary raise instead. Tesla was furious, and he quit his job on the spot. What followed were a couple of very difficult years for Tesla. In 1886, he partnered with two businessmen who invested in his ideas and designs, but their disagreements eventually drove Tesla out of the company and left him penniless. Tesla had to take various electrical repair jobs and even worked as a ditch digger, ironically, for Edison's company. You can imagine how humiliated he must have been. But events finally took a turn for the better when, in 1887, Tesla partnered with two other businessmen and set up a laboratory in New York. There, he developed an electric motor that could run on AC electricity and a transformer for converting voltage levels. Eventually, he got 7 patents on his alternating current ideas, covering every aspect of the process. When George Westinghouse heard about all the groundbreaking stuff Tesla was doing, he knew he had to work with him. He acquired the rights to the patent from Tesla for about $60,000, and together, powered by Westinghouse's fortune, the two began promoting alternating current. Edison, of course, could not sit idly by. He'd invested huge amounts of money on DC distribution. If Westinghouse and Tesla succeeded in convincing the rest of the country that AC was better than DC, all of Edison's investments would go down the drain. So Edison started a vicious PR campaign to sway public opinion against alternating current. Remember that at that time, Edison was a well-known and respected figure, so people paid attention to what he said and did. He designed his campaign around the dangers of alternating current, and his ads warned against consumers having high voltage delivered to their homes. A direct electrical current was like a calm river, while the evil alternating current was the equivalent of rough waters. Edison went as far as holding demonstrations showing how dangerous AC was. These demonstrations including using AC to electrocute dogs, cats, cows, and horses. Edison's smear campaign reached new levels of callousness when his company used one of Westinghouse's generators to invent the electric chair, intending to contrast the dangerous alternating current used in executions against the safe, warm, direct current used in the home. Edison even tried to coin the phrase Westinghousing as the process of execution in the electric chair. Like you would say, someone got Westinghoused. The first man executed with one of these new electric chairs was a murderer by the name of William Kemmler, who was convicted of killing his wife. Westinghouse tried to convince the court to have Kemmler executed some other way. I mean, he really didn't want his AC method to be associated with death and electrocution. Unfortunately for Westinghouse, he failed, and Kemmler became the first man to die in the electric chair. It was rather unfortunate for Kemmler as well, since, well, electrocution was a new thing, and nobody knew what voltage was needed to kill a human being. Kemmler was first pumped with 1,000 volts of electricity for 17 seconds, but that wasn't enough to kill him. He was knocked unconscious, but he was still breathing. The executioner turned the voltage up to 2,000 volts, but it took 8 minutes for the generator to recharge. when the electricity was finally applied, blood vessels under Kemmler's skin erupted and his skin was singed. Witnesses said the smell was awful. Westinghouse later said that Kemmler would have been better off if they'd just used an axe. So Edison tried to convince the public that AC was more dangerous than DC. Well, was he correct? Which of the methods, AC or DC, is more dangerous?
Well, actually, AC is a bit more dangerous than DC. When applied to a person, the alternating currents can interfere with the heart's own electrical signal, causing the heart muscles to lose coordination. This can happen with DC currents as well, but it usually takes a slightly higher current for DC to kill someone than in AC. But in practical terms, this doesn't really matter. Both AC and DC are so dangerous that it really makes no difference. A person touching an exposed wire would be electrocuted to death in both cases, so the distinction is mainly theoretical.
The War of the Currents reached a turning point at the Chicago World's Fair in 1893. The fair had a big influence on the industrial world. Everyone who was anyone in the world of science, engineering, technology, and even politics, they were all there. Westinghouse Electric and Edison's General Electric competed for the right to supply the power to light up the 1,000 light bulbs at the fair. And those bulbs did more than just provide light. They were the fair's main attraction. General Electric entered a bid of $1 million, explaining that most of the budget would go to creating the bulky copper cable grid needed for the direct current. The alternating current method didn't need such a complicated grid, so Westinghouse was able to underbid Edison by half. Westinghouse won the bid, of course, and President Grover Cleveland personally flipped the switch of Tesla's AC generators to turn on the lights. When the crowd saw the small and efficient generators compared to Edison's big, bulky cables, let's just say they were converted. The second turning point came courtesy of Niagara Falls, which was always considered an untapped source of energy. In 1890, a special committee was formed to decide on the best way of harnessing the power of the huge waterfalls. The committee was headed by an extremely famous scientist, Sir William Thomson, aka Lord Kelvin. So, here's Westinghouse and Edison going head-to-head again. The committee opposed the AC method at first, but they had a change of heart after seeing Tesla's demonstration at the Chicago World's Fair. So the Niagara Falls Power Station bid was awarded to Westinghouse. Chalk up another win to Westinghouse, Tesla, and AC. It took 5 long years to finish the project. A power plant was built near the falls, and giant AC generators, based on Tesla's design, converted the power of the flowing water to electricity that eventually powered the majority of the East Coast. New York was lit up with Tesla and Westinghouse's electricity. Broadway's flickering billboards became its trademark. That power plant, the Adams Power Plant, is now a U.S. National Historic Landmark. The Niagara Falls project put an end to the War of Currents, ruling in firm favor of Tesla's alternating current. The rivalry almost bankrupted both Westinghouse Electric and General Electric. The money problems were so bad that Westinghouse had to ask Tesla to give up most of his future profits. Tesla, in a grandiose act of chivalry, tore their contract to shreds. Tesla may have saved Westinghouse's company from going under, but he created major financial trouble for himself, and this followed him into his future projects and his life. In the end, Tesla died penniless. You might be wondering why we still have General Electric today if Edison's direct current lost the war. Well, once it became clear that AC was going to be the current of choice, GE's board of directors ruled against Edison's preferences and quickly switched General Electric over to the winning side. This episode in the history of electricity shines a light on a common theme in the world of technology, a theme that many people might not be aware of. It's tempting to think that when it comes to engineering and science, the best solutions, the ideas that are better, cheaper, or more effective, are the ones that win out. After all, this is science, and facts should have more weight than biased opinions, shouldn't they? In reality, there are many factors that determine the success of one technology over the others, and money and ego are two of those factors. And speaking of ego, despite their huge accomplishments, neither Edison nor Tesla won the Nobel Prize. Maybe it was because the Nobel Prize committee knew that neither one would show up to accept the prize if he knew he'd have to share the stage with the other guy. That's all for this episode of Curious Minds. You can listen to the first episode about rogue waves on our website, www.cmpod.net, where you'll also find links to all the social networks, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, etc. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or almost every other podcasting app on Android or iPhone. You can also subscribe to our mailing list and get an update every time a new episode is available. We'd love to hear your feedback and ideas for the next episodes. Let us know what you think at info@cmpod.net. If you're an advertiser interested in learning more about the podcast and becoming a sponsor, contact us at info@cmpod.net. Curious Minds is written and produced by Ron Levy. Nir Sayag is the sound editor, and Dani Timor is our business manager. I'm Shoshi Shmulevitz. Thank you for listening. See you again in 2 weeks. Bye.
Scrolling.
Now I'm scrolling. Scrolling.
When the crowd saw the small and efficient generators compared to Edison's big, bulky cables, let's just say they were converted. That was my joke.
It's better than mine.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!